Fellow members, my name is Nompho Nwenge, Director, Legal Services.
Good morning, members. My name is retired Brigadier General Dembe. I'm currently acting Director, Human Resource Management. Yes.
Good afternoon, members. I'm Sin Loho, the Chief Financial Officer in the department.
Okay, thank you very much. With the Parliament team, we've got the support staff, researchers, content advisors, and the two executive assistants to the two chairpersons, to the co-chairs. I would like us to run this meeting because it's a meeting. We're meeting with the army. That everything should be done with a military precision. Will you give us the main issues? We go into discussions, and then from there we close. This meeting should not take more than 1.5 hours. We'll need a strong motivation that it should go beyond that time. I'll give over to the DG, my general.
Thanks, Chair. The line of march has been at least a clear chair in terms of the presenters who are in the direct line. The acting DDG Social Economic Support Services is going to be dealing with the cleansing of the database project. Over to you, Ms. Marwan.
Good afternoon, honorable members. Mine will just be to give you an update from where we left off in our last interaction in October. And therefore, I will just go straight to the slide that speaks to the progress that has been made thus far. Okay. In terms of the last presentation that we had, we've given you the milestones that were dating back from the time that we had a baseline of about 30,000 plus files that were cleaned and cleared, which were on our national database and had all the fields populated in terms of the information of military veterans. At that point in time, we indicated that we took about 40,000 records to the Department of Defense for them to assist us with the cleansing of those records. And when we parted ways, we were now awaiting the outcomes of that cleansing exercise, which therefore means that we will be dealing from today with the last two quadrants of the slide. At that point in time, out of that 40,000 plus records that were sent to the Department of Defense, we had about 36,000 files that matched, and they had all the fields populated and information records received. We had about 1,300 that were not found on the DOD database. That is, those IDs and the false numbers could not be matched on the mainframe database of the Department of Defense. Therefore, our statistics of cleansed files or of files that have all the fields populated in our national database rose from the percent that was reported at that point in time to be 47% to 92%. This therefore means that at least with the then files that the then records that we had at DOD, we can safely say that 92% of our military veterans were indeed from the defense. They do have the false numbers. They do have the matching ID numbers that matched with their names. And at the same time, we can safely say that indeed they are military veterans. However, what they have in terms of their addresses and the contact details will reflect what was reflecting when they were exiting, which therefore means that we need to have another exercise to make sure that we have the current contact details for the sake of geomapping of our military veterans. Then the current National Military Veterans Database has about 80,500 military veterans. We have categorized them there in terms of provinces, and also have a category in terms of their military formation. Just at a glance, you will be able to see that the majority of our military veterans are from the what is called the statutory forces, as opposed to the 23% that is from the former liberation forces, which are called non-statutory forces. Subsequent to that, we have our DMV internal verification process. This speaks to military veterans that are not on the database and were also not on our initial CPR list. We had a number of military veterans that were applying to be put on the database, which then necessitated that we start with the internal verification process, which started in November 2019. We had a project that was running in Ekurhuleni for the provision of housing to military veterans. At that point in time, we had military veterans that wanted, or the aspirant military veterans, if I can use that word, that wanted to be provided with housing, but were not on the database. Then we said, okay, let's start the internal verification process to make sure that those that are claiming to be military veterans are military veterans, they are integrated into our database and provided with the benefits that they are supposed to get. We got that list that constituted of 600. We had 600 houses that were earmarked for military veterans in Palm Ridge at Ekurhuleni. Out of that 670, we managed to get the files that 105 files from applications from Palm Ridge and 12 from Ekurhuleni. These were from APNA and MK. We have started then that verification process, and out of those, we could not find, we could not make progress in terms of their verification, because we do have guidelines of our internal verification that stipulates the documentation that is needed and the vouching letters that are needed for us to be able to ascertain whether that particular individual indeed does meet the criteria of being registered in the DMV database. Out of that, next slide. Out of that, we then just managed to have about 200 military veterans who could qualify to be listed on the DMV database, and they were subsequently handed over to the Department of Human Settlements to be provided for housing. We are having challenges in the eligibility in assessing the eligibility of military veterans due to the fact that most of them, they send a documentation that does not have vouching letters from the associations. Some of them are signed by people that are not designated to be signatories or to vouch for them as military veterans, as it is the case of some of the applicants that we had from MK and APNA respectively. The other challenge that we are having in terms of finalizing this verification is the issue of the verification process being conducted by the internal personnel who are not necessarily within the database environment or the beneficiary support services environment. Therefore, we do from time to time have challenges of correcting, as people will be having conflicting or competing priorities in their own environments, which they are monitored and measured on. So sometimes we have a challenge in terms of forming that quorum for us to be able to continue to do the work. And then also, there's also an issue of a challenge with the confidence from the appointed members as to whether they will be able to carry this responsibility, because it is understandably so a very huge responsibility for you to be able to ensure that we have a credible and secured military database. So those are the reasons that are from time to time delaying us from being able to complete the exercise and finish it on time. As you would recall in the past that we recorded that we had about 4,100 military veterans who have applied generally, just not for the housing project, for them to be included on the database. We struggled to move on that because more than half of that, about 2,800 documents, were incomplete. Associations were not willing to vouch for some of the applicants. So now that made an issue in terms of the credibility of those applicants, and we could not move. We have returned those boxes back to the associations to make sure that they come from them eligible and appropriate, just for us to do the administration in line with the template that we have developed for the, with the department, to make sure that we put credible people on the database. And then in light of the challenges, we were recommending as a department amongst ourselves to say that maybe it will be prudent that we have this verification process happening outside the headquarters, so that whoever is being sought to assist does not from time to time go from the panel and then they go and do their responsibilities. At least we'll be dedicated to be able to focus on that exercise. We'll have timelines to make sure that the program is concluded within the set timeline. We also would like to have, just for authenticity and for credibility, have include the commanders of the former SDUs where available, to ensure that there's no back and forth in instances where we need clarity on some of the biographies that have been provided to us. The other thing that we also will propose, that from time to time, if the information that we are getting from the biography, and it has all the necessary documents, but there's discrepancies in terms of the way that the biography is coming through, we'll be able to call those individuals to have a face-to-face interaction, obviously in the presence of the entire panel and their respective commanders where possible. And we also have a suggestion, which obviously is an internal suggestion, that we really make sure that we finalize this thing of the electronic database management tool, just to ensure that the database is integrated, it's accessible to everyone, and it is credible. So far, those are the initiatives that we have been doing to make sure that we complete this database cleansing process. The following slide is just the filter that which was speaking to in the previous presentation we had with you on the steps and the interdependencies that we have in terms of delivering the database. And I think I've already spoken to you to those issues in my narrative. I would like us to go to the outstanding activities in terms of us concluding this. Currently, we had engagements with our sister departments whom we think they are going to be critical in us delivering the solution. We have spoken to the DHA, and interestingly, we have already submitted a file of about 80,000 military veterans that are on the database, just to check them across the population register to ensure that there is an alignment of their IDs to the persons that we say they are. And it was an interesting exercise because we managed to match about 97% of the records. Of that 80,000 that we sent, 78,000 of them matched, and then we also had an opportunity to know who is still alive and who's deceased, because out of that 80,000, out of that 78,000 that has matched, we realized that 18,000 of them are deceased, and we had those that couldn't match at all in the population register 724, which makes about 0.0%. So those are the ones that the IDs are not matching the population register. Some of the IDs are short, and the others are possibly from the IDs that were from the old ID documents, because you'll find that we've got those IDs that are starting with the one, but therefore we can't match those particular individuals. So we don't know whether they are still alive or they've passed on. But then that means that we need to have an exercise that is dedicated towards looking at this number, because they are in our military reference database, and therefore we need to make sure that we have authentic people that we are going to be providing benefits to. So that is the status of the exercise that we have already done in line with the Department of Home Affairs. We are in the process of concluding an MOU with the DOD. However, we are using our current overall MOU that we are having for them to be able to assist us with the exchange of the data files. We also have a backlog in terms of the review of the records. In fact, it's not a review as such, but an integration of the records of the beneficiaries that are receiving benefits from the department. We can safely say that out of that 80,000, about 37,000 of the beneficiaries are indeed linked to the database, because the process right now is reversed. It's as such that when you apply for a benefit, you apply directly to that particular program, and then we take your documents, we check them against the database, and then when you are found to be in the database, we only then begin to provide benefits to you, which therefore means that we are working in reverse. We need to try, and we are trying to do that we must have an integrated database where at face value, when you punch that particular military veteran's ID, you can be able to tell the dependents, you can be able to tell what benefits they are getting and so forth. So for now it's a manual process because we are doing it reverse. But at least across all benefits, for example in health we have about 18,000, in education we're about 5,000 plus and so forth and so forth. So those are the ones that have been meshed towards the database in our attempt to align the database. And then we are also, as an ongoing process from time to time, dealing with the issues of creating the physical files, as we have now received the clean data from the Department of Defense. I think that is as far as I can go in terms of our progress made in the database cleansing project. Thank you.
Home Affairs and others, it means makes it much easier first to check if the person is still alive. But we've got people who are experts in that field, and I think we need to outsource some of the things to them to be able to speed up this process. If we don't have capacity, the army does not have that capacity of training people. They are different in the country, and others will be able to do that. Of course, there are other institutions within the army that has those capacities, but we wouldn't want to stretch them that they go into areas that may not necessarily add value to what they do. So it's over to you, members, who have questions of clarity and or issues of debate on this issue. You are all welcome. I recognize the co-chair and then the Honorable Mola, and then here at the end, Mute, Abut, and then, in that order.
Thank you very much, Chair.
I'm happy that we have come this far, though would have actually expected you to have gone a bit further. Then my next question, what do you regard as the end state of this project? We started talking to each aligning all the files so that at the press of a button you are able to say this is Chabeleng, has so many dependents, and these dependents, this is how we are supporting them. These are the benefits that they are actually accessing, and so on and so forth. Now, seated where you are seated, what do you see at the end stage of this project, where you say, if it is successfully completed, this project, this database must be looked like this? If you are able to tell us that, by when are you going to reach that milestone? And I'm asking this question because it's long overdue. A database is the backbone of this department. You can't even begin to, accurately perform your task until you have your database in order. So that would be my question, sir. And then the second question is that you have, amongst the issues you have identified as a problem towards speeding up this process of finalization, of reaching the end state, you said there were, there were competing priorities that led to people, some officials not attending the meetings. I think this should be the last time that is happening. All right? The next time when it happens, you must, in this meeting, when we call you to come to this meeting, you must tell us that these are the meetings that were set, people were informed in time, they confirmed that they would attend, but this was the attendance record in this meeting, so that we will know who is not, who is delaying you from finalizing this project. In other words, we must now get to naming and shaming. This will be said here in public, so that the name of an official who does not cooperate with the process
goes on the record and it appears everywhere else that this fellow doesn't, you know, honor his or her responsibilities, because we can't allow this thing from, you know, continuing the way it has been continuing. It's got to come to an end. Thank you so much.
The database is referred to as a center of gravity. Over to you.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for your presentation. Chairperson, I'm confused here, because in the introductory, I see a lot of people acting. I don't know if at this post that they are acting on it are vacant or are funded. If are vacant or funded, when are they going to fill it? Because you can't have acting, Chairperson. My second question is in slide 7. It says the recommendation has been made and feedback given that the association provides a promotion letter for each member. And it says MKMDA Secretary General committed to attend to the matter. This is still pending. For how long is this still going? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for the presentation. I also wanted to say I felt like I was at the Oscars just now with all of the actors in the room. Chair, first of all, I'd like to agree with what you were saying, and I hope that there's a lot of sharing of data between different institutions, because, you know, if someone is willing to take up arms and fight for their country, I would hope that that person would also be willing to take up a pen and make an X in voting for the country. So I would presume that the IEC certainly and Home Affairs would have a lot of this information readily available, especially with the IEC's massive efforts to get updated details from registered voters. So I hope that we are not all working in isolation. I hope there's a sharing of data and information that is happening. Otherwise, we will merely be spending money on all doing the same work, and it will remind me of the days when I was a banking messenger and I used to walk between all the different banks, and there were other guys from all other banks that were walking the same route that I did, and we all would know each other and see each other, and we were all dating the same girls in the different banks, but we were all doing the same job effectively, and I mean, you know, a duplication, exactly. So I hope that there is data sharing, but then the question that I have, the bigger question is why do we want the database? What is the purpose of putting the database together? Is it an academic exercise? Is it for the pay out of some sort of benefits, etc.? You know, are we chasing a goal because someone once said we need a database? What is the purpose of it? So if it's purely for the payout of benefits, I would think we would then expect to be a little bit more reactive than proactive, and you know, say to people who wants to claim benefits and then verify any of those details. But to go and try and rebuild an entire database, what is the purpose for it, and does that purpose justify the time, energy, and cost that's going into the project? You know, there's an old story of some people, I believe it was in America somewhere, where they had a bunch of people that used to go out every day and count how many dolphins were in the harbour. And this carried on for 100 years. And people were employed over 100 years to go out every morning and count up the dolphins in the harbour. And then someone said, why are we doing this? And the answer was because some queen visiting from England 120 years before had said, oh, I wonder how many dolphins are in the harbour. And since then, they paid someone every single day to go. So my question really is, what is the purpose of this? What is our end goal? And I think it ties in with the co-chair's comments about, you know, what are we hoping to see at the end of this? Thank you, Chair.
We are definitely not counting dolphins. Honourable Wood.
Thanks, Chair. I'll start with
objective and the purpose of that resolution. That's just what we need here. Because clearly we are perpetuating the imbalances out of the resolution that seeks to address something. Because it says, without even getting deeper, that because those who fought against the system, they had no records, they had no systems in place, but their objective was to fight the system. They are still suffering today, because those that are clearly benefiting are those who were from the system that was there oppressing them. And they are the most beneficiaries today. Maybe we need to rethink what is it that we want to achieve. Because when you go further, you speak of your guideline that you follow for you to achieve what you seek to achieve on the database. But still, what must be addressed remains unaddressed. Now, my second question is on the basis that on slide 7, you say you are unable to meet, the committee that is supposed to meet is unable to meet because people have got other departmental priorities. What priorities are those? Because these are your clients, you must tell. Which other priorities do you have that will enable you to see them service your clients? Maybe we will understand what are those priorities. Maybe you've got other clients except saving these ones and ensuring that you clean the database so that you can serve them effectively and efficiently so. Lastly, Chair, on slide 8, on what they are recommending. Versus the body that they have within the department called SAMPA. Why would they want to go and get commanders of various organizations of while they've got SAMPA, which is a representative of all those organizations, and which is elected to assist the department? Why do you want to duplicate and go and get other people to sit on a board, whilst you, as officials and elected SANVA leaders, you can sit and ensure that you speed up the process without, because it's still going to delay. If you take for an example, you say, no, the chair in Chabeleng was a commander, must come and sit there. Whilst you want him here in Parliament, you have a meeting there. Now, his priority might be meetings in Parliament, because he's elected to serve in Parliament. Now, you'll want him to be there, and he will not be able to serve there. You will still come here and report that, no, we are not courageous, because people who are there, whilst you've got people who are elected to assist you, unless if you don't know the purpose of having SANVA there, so that we just do away with it. So I think, maybe if I can clarify on those, Chair. If there's follow-up, I'll come back. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Anyway, the members have alluded to the issue of the non-attendance by SAMHSA to the meeting that is meant to prioritize the database for military vendors. But I think I'm fine with those questions. But in the previous, I raised an issue. Was when the issue of the SDUs was mentioned as one of the liberation movement, I asked the question that if the SDUs, now to be considered. Isn't that same must apply to the issue of the SPUs? And I can see here, in the report, there is nothing that is talking about the SPUs. And just want to know whether there is a reason not to include the SPUs, or there is something else. But I remember that I raised that question previously. Thank you.
Thank you, Spencer.
Thank you, Chair. I think the issue of location cannot be overemphasized, especially with regards to what they were saying, that the officials, sometimes they are there, they are not there, and they have to postpone the December meeting or the December process of doing this stuff in the location. But what I want you to do is to give us a picture of how long or how prompt are your responses with regards to verifying. If I may make an example, you would have a client that would go and seek health services. And that client would assume that you would go there because at that moment they are ill or they really need to be provided with health assistance. Now you turn them back simply because you need to verify them if they are indeed the correct beneficiaries. How long does it take for you to even go back to them and respond that indeed you do qualify or you do not qualify? There are many cases when we're doing oversight the previous year when we went to the center, and such cases arose where members would say that we'll go and seek assistance but we'll be turned back, and it takes forever for the department or for them to get education if they do qualify for those services or not. So I want you to give us a picture that generally, how long does it take for you to go back to the members and give them a feedback?
I'm just worried that maybe the problems of delivering on this side could be affected by others, by a lot of others inside. But I can hear that there's some cry somewhere that, you know, there's a constitutional or legal lacuna in terms of the definitions of what, who is a military veteran, who is a war veteran. Because I think if there's a difference between the two, we've got to clear those kind of things. But that is a discussion for some other time, and which might also even call that we should amend the Military Veterans Act so that it can make matters easy for the department to do, you know, to be able to do their work without with minimum strain. Honourable Magen.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just one question from my side. The verification process. I was just thinking, if you have a corrupt commander who would maybe sell this service certificate to anybody, how do you get around that issue? How do you sniff it out that not this one, because he has got or she has got the documentation that I needed, and a service certificate from a bogus commander, just to make sure that the process wouldn't instate verify people who, or confirm people who don't belong there. Just worried about that. Thank you very much.
The use of amendment of the Act will help us with a lot of other things. Do we call vigilante some of it to? Are they military veterans? Will you call them as war veterans? Number vigilantes, because they fought in this political war by defending the status quo. Do you you call the black cat, a military or war veteran. Shogunamahola is old. And many other groups that were seen or labeled by those who were fighting against apartheid as collaborators. Do those people also qualify? What about those who served in the South African Defense Force? Because those who served before, of course, they are military veterans, yes. But those military veterans were getting pensions, they were paid every day. They were earning their salaries every month. And they had benefits including health and you name them, all the other benefits that those who were in the liberation movement on the other side were not getting, were volunteers. Now how to close that gap? I think if there are gaps in the law, tell us so that it is our responsibility to ensure that the laws are that the laws are amended so that your work can be, you know, can be very easy to do, so that you can do your work with minimal strain. With those comments from the members, let's hear from you, General, and your team.
Thanks, Chad. With your permission, I will ask colleagues just to respond. And the ones who can't, then just get them up on the call. I'll repeat them.
Thank you, all of the members, for the eye-opening question. The response to the first question that speaks to what is the end that we need to see, the end product that we need to see so far as the database is concerned, and also the timeline by when do we need to see that end state. The first part of the question, would like to have a database that is credible, meaning that is having people who are legitimate and who are indeed military veterans. Hence the exercise of cross-matching the data files with the Department of Defense. Hence the exercise of making sure that whoever is there is being vouched for if that person was left out from the beginning when the department was established. We would like to see a database that is integrated. Integrated in a sense that, as we did indicate that we had that exercise of cross-matching with the Department of Home Affairs to make sure that we indeed have the right people with the right names, which corresponding IDs, and also to be able to geomap where we can be able to find the correct information and addresses of the military veterans. Geomapping being critical for us to be able to dispense benefits to people at their correct locations. Geomap to allow us to even establish and put our footprint in areas where we are sure that we do have people that seek those services, as opposed to just having a blanket approach of having offices all over, but you only find that there's only 1 or 10 people in that particular province. Would like to have a database that has been, as I've indicated earlier, that is even internally able to tell you, yes, this is a military veteran. As one member has just indicated, how long does it take for one when you are sick and then you can't even get health care? In every department or service partner that is servicing military veterans, they need to be at the click of the button. When a person comes to for healthcare center or wherever, when they just check the ID number or whatever the identification that will be given, the database, our database, should be able to speak to that for that person to be able to be identified immediately and be able to be assisted. So in a nutshell, we need to make sure that we just have that seamless and integrated database, which is credible. That is the most important part, the credibility. Secondly, this now, in terms of by when, it's a priority, as everybody is already indicating, that people are being disadvantaged by the issue of the fact that they are not on the database. All being equal, as we've been talking throughout the years, we should have been at that end state. However, through to the issues of dependencies in terms of making that system available, integrated, and sticking to the other systems, we are dependent in terms of support from other state entities like your CTAS to make this this database credible or integrated for that matter, without us going to seek solutions somewhere when there are already solutions that are around in government. Therefore, that speaks to our strengthened intergovernmental relations and interactions. And also, it speaks to the issue of where we are having challenges in soliciting support from those entities that are entrusted with that support that they are supposed to give us. That is flat on time, and we are able to, if there's a way to have a breakthrough or intervention from our principals, that is being done. So if it was all were equal, we would have really loved to make sure that maybe at the latest, towards the end of the second quarter, at least we are saying that we are having something that can form a foundation for a person who's outside there, even though it might not be perfect at that point in time. So this is what we will be aiming at in terms of our interactions in strength in making these MOUs operational and begin to breathe. And where we have challenges, we need to indicate as such. So we are looking at around the end of the second quarter in terms of just having something that we can say it has been tested, maybe it needs strengthening here and there, but at least it's in operation. Insofar as the issue of the, and then obviously I've indicated it must have all the required records accurate, what you need as a person, your IDs and everything else. Insofar as the issue of the acting, I will leave that to the accounting officer. And then there's that question, there's another question, sub-question in question two, which is speaking to the issue of actually, MKMVA pending. The pending interaction is since November, but I can safely say that we have been interacting. The latest interaction that we had with them was last week on Tuesday, when we sat with them, and then they managed to bring a few names that were already having the proper routing letter per member, and then the others are still going to be able to assist us. We've also created a steering committee that is supposed to report to each other on a weekly basis, just to make sure that we don't leave things until the last minute. The question that speaks to... Okay, the other one, I think it was more of an advice and a comment, which that speaks to the issue of noting the individuals that can't sit and name and shame. And yes, I think we need to also strengthen just the team and probably reconfigure it in such a way that we look at individual strength and responsibility areas. But I think it suffices to say that it is noted that if maybe we do our calendar on time and then it's a set calendar, we might be able to have a proper interaction and contribution from the official. The issue of why do we need to have a database? I think somebody indicated that the database is the backbone or whatever that name that was used here. But the bottom line is that the database will enable us to observe our mandate as legislated. It is why the department has been created. Therefore, for us to be able to carry our legislated mandate of honoring, of providing benefits, of assisting, of building, we need to know who is it that we are supposed to carry that mandate to. So it is imperative that it's also become very, 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 very secured to ensure that that which we need to achieve is not given to people that are not deserving of those benefits. But more importantly, it is the source data for our activities on a day-to-day basis. I didn't quite get the slide 5 question from you, another member. However, I understood you to be speaking to an issue of, as then corrected, speaking to an issue of us being able to say who really needs to get this benefit. As you were making an example of people that had worked before, they benefited, they had descended. For me, that speaks to the issue of prioritization in terms of benefits dispersing, because it can never be divorced from who is a military veteran. A military veteran will always remain a military veteran in line with the definition. But whether you are a military veteran that should be getting certain benefits at a certain point, it's another question altogether, which seems to suggest that maybe we need to be deliberate or have something that speaks to us in terms of who exactly are we trying to lift to the level that is going to be equitable for everyone who is under the military veteran umbrella. And I will maybe leave that for the accounting officer to strengthen if the response is not necessarily strong or clear. Committing priorities, I think I've spoken to that. Yes, we note the inputs by the committee, but more importantly, the issue that you raised, honourable member, of saying we have a SANVA, so why do we need to have commanders? I will ask the ADG to speak to that, and also the issues of the SDUs versus the STUs, and then qualifying for verification. I've indicated that one will be very easy to achieve once we have an integrated database. But to answer, in terms of military veterans that are not yet registered on the DMD database but seek to access benefit, the first qualifying criteria for any benefit is for that military veteran to be on the database. Where a military veteran was initially in the DOD, immediately the ID number is sent to the DOD for them to be checked whether they are on the DOD database. And then upon verification of that, it goes to the database unit, who will then put that military veteran on the database. And then we get that information from that particular benefit, which is the healthcare benefit. Then you give an authorization for that military veteran to be able to access healthcare. Where a military veteran is on the Department of Military Veterans database, is requesting access to healthcare, then at that unit of healthcare, we immediately issue the healthcare authorization, and the military veteran will be able to. That one is done within a day, because the most important part that we need to observe of that person being in the database of the Department of Military Veterans is clear and easy. So yes, then this speaks to, it takes us back to the issue of an integrated database management, because even if you were not on the database of the Department of Military Veterans, but your ID number and FOS number is reflecting at the DOD or at SEMS where you are supposed to be receiving services, they'll be able to pick it up and be able to see that you are an eligible beneficiary. So I think that is what I've just start from the members and say if you could stress in me on that. Hmm? Yes. Thank you.
Madam Chair, I think that database which must be and be secure. The security part of it will be at least taken care of once our ICT system is in place and it's very well charged. So working with CISA, I'm trying to get that integrated database management system. It's a challenge. It might affect even the question of time frame, because we've been working with them for some time now, but we're not getting the solution to that. In terms of the issue of the acting members, there are posts in terms of the one where I'm sitting as acting DG, that post is funded. Then the two DDGs who are acting, those posts are there, they are funded. The challenge has been when we wanted to fill those posts, it's at the stage where the new administration was going to come in. Then from public sector administration, there was a recommendation that we should at least await the result of a reconfiguration of the government departments in terms of those which were merging and some of functions were moving. So as last week, we were able at least to discuss with the acting DG in the Department of Public Sector Administration about when this kind of moratorium is going to be lifted. She indicated to me, discussing with her, that last week she was waiting to have a sense from the process they are involved in to see how many possible individuals are going to be supernumerous, and therefore when we then begin to look at taking people on board, we must take from those if they fit the profile, and then if not, then we can advertise. So that's where this service acting part comes in. Also, in terms of why the database, just to strengthen what my colleague has just indicated, that to do planning and budgeting, you need to have a sense of how many people you are talking to. And of course, not only that, their state of health, so that you can have a sense of those who might require some assistance in terms of health services. And also in terms of their dependence, so that you can budget and plan for the education part of it. So mainly this is part of those aspects to be able to deliver the benefits, but also the budgeting part of it in terms of the planning process. The issue of the resolution and the 2005 integration, I think the challenge here with the issue of now the figures as they reflect in terms of numbers. First is SAGF has bigger numbers than everybody else. And then you superimpose the little homelands as part of the standing forces. And then during the integration, the liberation armies didn't have deep numbers. That's one. And two, in the integration process, some did demob. But because we had the CTR list which was provided, so it is easy to take them on board as part of that POD-HR. So where we are struggling in terms of getting people, those were not part of the CPR list, but those were part of the CPR list, which is easy. Now, I will probably share through you, ask that we need to do a little bit of analysis in terms of, now with the people we have presently and who are busy dispensing benefits, if we can have the ratio, how many of those really coming from the status, the non-statutory forces? Because I think that at least give us a sense, we can at least provide that. But now we have not done that. So that they say, yes, the figures themselves show that SAGF is, they are more in numbers, but it does not necessarily mean that they are applying for the benefits. Most of them, because they were kind of well taken care of, are not even coming to the building, especially the white. The ones who might be coming to the building to ask for these benefits would be more coming from the black guys to from the SAGF, and of course mainly from the TBBC. But we will come with that one in terms of just to also make sure that when we look at the present, if it's dispensing of the benefits, what ratio are we talking to? As a still with us. But now, mainly what has been happening with the process which we are involved in, it has been just individuals from the association who might not even, in terms of the right structure from their own formations, might be sitting up in the command element, but they happen to be members of the association and then signing. And as a department, we are saying, we need those who've got the authority, and then we're designated at the time. That's what we're engaging to say. Yes, they must come and assist us in terms of making sure that what is being vouched for by any association commander must at least be also collaborated by those individuals. In terms of the STUs and the SPUs, the STUs, in my understanding, subject correction, would be mainly coming from the ISP side. And then the STUs would be mainly coming from the other formations. But the numbers and the areas where this was taking place in terms of mainly late 80s, early 90s, I think we can't have a sense of where this phenomenon of the STUs and SPUs are taking place. And we did try during the interrogation, I think the SPUs, those who are coming from the ISP, were taken on board. I know that because I was part of that process, and I know that they were led by, I just forget now, it's called coming from the MK, Rituri. They were led by Rituri, and then we were able, as you said, to take them on board. Now he came in, Rituri came in, leading the SPUs from the ISP. So they were integrated. And since then it became quite in terms of the numbers they had. But now the SPUs were coming mainly in the main from the ANC stroke MK side. So that's what is there. In terms of the feedback, how long does it take? I think we are trying our level best, but I think because of communication and people changing their numbers, sometimes, and of course, sometimes we struggle. You would think you've got the contact details of the person this week, and then you're trying to go back, you're not getting the person. So we are struggling, but also we are using some of the associations to try and reset in terms of giving feedback. The verification process, corruption, self-certificate, that's possible. It is possible. But this is why we are beginning to ask for those, at least who were designated, because they were senior, they are still senior, at least they have got a kind of trust in terms of the identity and managing that process. But if we leave it to the issues of the association themselves, we might be vulnerable as a department, but we're taking care of that. So I wanted just to highlight those things.
Thank you. The question was, the other question was, why the Matandura's peacemakers people, why are they listed not the rather peacemakers? So having problems in terms of, you know, the impediments in your doing your work because the law does not allow you, or the law, you know, there are gaps in the law. You cannot do this again unless this law is passed or changed. And that does not depend on you, it depends on us. So Parliament, you work so that you can make our work easier. You kept quiet about that one, which means it's not a problem. Then what is the problem? Why are you unable to verify names that are in card boxes and it takes you more than 2 years or even 3 years to do that? I really don't understand. If there are no challenges in terms of law, then why are you not doing your work? Honorable Martin.
Chairperson, just must I call it a follow-up, because I don't think it's good enough to say there's that gap, that this might be happening, this ghost. I don't think the answer is good enough, because if you say that might be happening, it means you are not sure, and you are not sure of the extent. And if you are not sure of the extent of that, then we might be in trouble. So, well, the explanation is that those that we designated a long time ago, then we are reverting back to them, and so on and so on. Because that's where the problem is now. I thought you would say you've got a waterproof system as of now of sniffing those people out. And not only sniffing them, those that signed those, what do you call them, those that signed the certificate must be locked up. There's no other way, because they have been sourcing funds that don't belong to them. They gave people houses that doesn't belong to them. They used the funds to take next door neighbor's children to school that didn't deserve. So I don't think it's good enough to say, yeah, it might be happening and so on. We want those people in prison, because a lot of these other people died without getting their benefits whilst the benefits went to bogus people. Thank you, Chairperson.
Actually, I was expecting to hear timelines in terms of your inputs when you answer questions. It cannot be an open-ended thing that we need to be in a database. For how many years? How long does it take to be in a database? How long? How many years do you want? Tell us. Do you want 10 years? Is it going to take you 10 years? So that we know what we are dealing with. Because I thought there would be a sitting challenge. We cannot do this because of this and that. This is what Parliament needs to do so that we can, you know, we can do our work with ease. You don't have problems from what you are saying. So it's actually inefficiencies possibly on your side. Because if there's nothing that, you know, I've asked, I think we should move, because this discussion is not taking us anywhere. Chairperson, I'll give over to you, and then Honorable Mutin, another hand before we decide what to do, how we end this meeting. Because, I mean, for me, this is just we're just talking. There are no commitments. We will do this by a certain time. We have discovered this. This is the action that we're going to take. Because I was going to say, in the next meeting, we'd like to see the case numbers. Because if somebody steals from you, and you discover that somebody stole from us, stole from me, what else do you do? To take action. And I'm not hearing any commitment on your side. No, it's an academic exercise. We've got the database. Now we clean these ones. We're not benefiting. They benefited for so many years. were not supposed to benefit, so they will stop benefiting now. Whatever they got, they can give happily with it ever after. We need to deal with perceptions. A perception is that there's generally corruption, and I don't want to believe that. So that's it. There could be actual corruption, and mostly what we talk about is perceived corruption. And if you find that somebody has stolen and you are not doing anything about it, what does it say about you? Are you shielding these people who stole from the... Or are you saying it's okay if you stole 7 years ago? No, it's okay. It doesn't matter. We need to hear something different. And I want to hear time frames. Otherwise, we're going to give you time frames. I don't give them today, before the end of this week, which might mean that we need that information in the next 14 days. And we're going to say it's not possible because of this. Tell us now before we give you a timeline. Honorable Clark. Honorable Korea, you are noted. Is there last hand this side? Because after the final responses, we'll close the meeting. Yes, Commander, your hand is up. Okay, there's you. Okay, then. Okay, fine.
Jay, I just need to make a follow up. On the 1st of October, when the department was before us, this issue featured prominently, and we realized that there is a problem, and that we can't afford these challenges affecting, these challenges because the database is the backbone, as it were. We then said, we give you until this time, in other words, that was October, and said we'll meet in February when we get, now a report, a final report on how you are dealing with this, you're cleaning this database up. But today you have given us progress. And you are then saying, I think I heard you saying it, that by the end of the second quarter, you might be in a position to produce something that is almost final. And the parents must firm that up. If we say, remember, it's the end date, database that is credible, is foolproof, that does not have the problems of suspicion that they may be, ghost, beneficiaries, or ghost, not beneficiaries, ghost, so-called military veterans. So if you say end of the quarter, of the second quarter, let's say end of the second quarter, so that we don't talk about this ever again. We know we have a database cleaned up, credible, and something we can all rely on. But for us to have a credible database, with the concern that has been raised, I think probably it's high time that we consider what IEC is doing. If the voter's roll was not a public document, people would not be able to point out that on this voter's roll, I have somebody who has registered as his or her residential address, my address, and I don't know him. Or I have somebody who is registered in this ward, yet he does not stay in this ward, he stays in the other ward. secretive or secret and only known to the IEC officials. I don't think that the voters' role will be as credible as it is today. What do you consider the sample, not the requirement of the law? Let this database be published. In other words, even if you don't make it, publish it as, you know, but you make it accessible for people to see who is on this database. Make it a public document. Have it on your website. Boom. Everyone to see. So that we are then able to say, but how is it possible? How is it possible? Because this one, for him to qualify, you know, should have been at this particular age. To qualify for this benefit, should have been at this particular age. But I know for a fact that he was not even born by then. I'm just making that as an example. All right? And, this person, there's no way he could have been in the struggle, you know, in the trenches, you know, because I know that his family, I know his everything, and, you know, I know where he stays, and I know his attitude towards, you know, things and all that, and we are then able to pick that up and then raise it so that the officials can then attend to it. Only then your document can become credible. In other words, when you create an environment whereby people are able to, you know, whistleblow, you know, the fraud here, we can see fraud or a potential fraud, therefore we bring it to our attention. Possibly Director General, I think we must, General, I think we must consider that. This document to be a public document. It's got to be a public document precisely because, you know, we especially when people access benefits, you know, and we spend money on those people, it's taxpayers, why must taxpayers not know who is actually intended to benefit from the money that we are putting aside? Possibly is a matter that we should, you know, raise with the minister and say it can't be kept in secret somewhere else. Because it therefore lends itself to a potential fraudulent, you know, people being placed on it. Thank you so much.
There's no country that hides its heroes. People who fought for freedom anywhere in the world, their names are on the lips of all citizens who love freedom. Why should we keep ours? Why should we hide our heroes? Because if somebody said I fought for freedom, I'm a war veteran. That's who we are. But I can, some of the things that you say are challenges, I can safely say without fear of loss of contract, that in Umkhonto SEC, all, I mean, STUs fell under the NK. And there's no STU that formed itself. The SDUs were formed by us, trained by us, armed by us, to be able to, you know, to get initial arms. Some of them even ended up disarming the enemy to arm themselves. So all and the MK structures all over the country, APMCs and all that.
So when you say us, you mean Parliament?
No, I'm saying I'm speaking with a fear of any contradiction. That the SDUs are unit of condoms. They are not just vigilantes, they are different from vigilante groups. So they can be, they are verifiable. It is easy to verify them. And if you talk to the right people who are in condoms, those who are from those SDUs, they will be able to verify them. Yeah, so it's not really a challenge. I don't think it's a challenge. I think the problem could be commitment by other people that they don't want this process to be complicated. If one is to take what is said by the media seriously, I would be asking lots of questions about things that I would.
benefited when they are not supposed to benefit because it's a paper. Where somebody takes his child to the school, the child is staying at home, but they still claim boarding fees. I recently, but I don't even remember who that person is. But what's happening with those kinds of cases? Because if you say we say bring all your veterans the list, but anyone who signed fraudulently, let's say you identify a person who is not supposed to be on the list, then you have committed a crime. And whatever that person got will have to be claimed from you. I think there must be a way of communication. I'm not sure about how the army communicates, I mean the department communicates, but I don't remember seeing things that are published by the army. Maybe it's because I lost interest in the military. Yes, I know. Yes, I see. Communication. Honorable Korea, and then we close. Well, that was my theme at home. Okay, and then that's all. But then you had a short.
No, not that. My apology for joining the meeting late. I thought I was not going to say a word, but I'm getting a sense that this whole project is treated as a by-the-way matter. People do something as and when they have a chance. They're not giving themselves time to deal with this thing once and for all and dispense of it. Because we will go further and ask them, from the database that we have, how many are former Mkhondosis, how many are former Apple, how many are former Azanla, and so on and so forth. You will not get the thing. So we want a breakdown of that information that has been, because a number without names wouldn't really assist. Because even those who are there, who are hoping, would think that they are part of that number. But where their names are not there. So it goes to this thing that the chair is raising, that we need information that is detailed, that will be made public, so that even those people who are still hoping would think their names are there, because some people submitted their names through others, and in the process those names fell through the cracks. But they don't know if their names fell through the cracks, because they don't know who is there and who is not there. They will only see others getting, and then they will say, maybe I'm still on the queue. And the reality of the matter, ladies and gentlemen, is that people are dying. Every day, people are dying, waiting to reap the benefits of their strategy. So I think we need to make sure that we provide accurate information. And for us to, and don't wait for information to come to you. Go after the information. Come and verify the information. And immediately you say there may be manipulation of the process, then you cast doubt on your own work. You make us not trust what you're saying, because we're not sure if really there's no manipulation of the process, because you're giving us that doubt now. So I think when you come here, it's a pity that the chairperson spoke about the end of the first quarter, because when I raised my hand, I was raising my hand to give you a definite time frame, which is much shorter than what the chairperson is giving you. And I hope that the chairperson, now that the chairperson has given you the time that he has given you, that is the time where we will come back and get the accurate information. Because from now, we want to get to a point where you come back and report as to how far you are in implementing the benefits, not in still sourcing the information. We must say the information is shown. So I think, Chair, that's what I just wanted to say, that in the next meeting, we shouldn't be discussing about who is there and who is not there. We should be saying, this is the final list. We are not changing any names because these are the final names. This is now what we will be doing in terms of dispensing the benefits that are due to those military veterans. Thanks, Chair.
Enforcement to make a case.
Yes.
I think, yeah, that is what
to have applied and to pass on, but as an application, then the dependents will get the house. So those kind of challenges, some of the dependents, the parents, both of them are not there. They are orphaned. Okay, now the question is, do we then say they must follow the RPP process in terms of home affairs, or they must then get this benefit from as military veterans? So those are the challenges we are facing. It's the same with the issue of, in terms of the means test. Now, if we say you are earning at this much, and that's what, then we say then you don't qualify. Again, there's an argument present, so we need to be able at least to make sure that the means test is there. So those are the kinds of the challenges. How far do you go? Use somebody who's retired, was working in the state forces, he has accumulated, as you said, good pension, and the kids are old now, and probably they are working. What is this person going to apply? And the person is got a house, so he's not supposed to get. So those are the things, but sometimes you've got people working in other government departments, military veterans, applying for us assisting in terms of education support. Some are working at the level of a chief director. Then, MINTEF. So those are the things I could go and share. I just wanted to mention those few. Well, in terms of the, we've taken note in terms of the public settings document, in terms of the database, of course, with all the legal implication will involve and look at that, we'll be able to say, is it viable, and we'll engage the minister going forward in terms of the advice given. The names of the, if we look at the figures, those figures of 8,737 people, a figure we can give the names, they are available. The only challenge with some of the names is those kind of IDs, which are not necessarily found in the Department of Home Affairs in terms of trying to match, because they seem to be a challenge. And the other challenge we are faced with some of those individuals is their own addresses and their contact numbers in terms of telephone. But the names are there. So we can at least provide the names. In terms of SANVA, with SANVA presently, the term of office of SANVA came to an end about a year ago. That's one. And the challenge is, as I was saying, why we tend to be looking for commanders. Challenge is, in an association, one can find himself in a higher position, who then might not necessarily have been a senior person at a particular stage in terms of this organization, especially during the times of struggle. But he might be a senior person. Then he might not necessarily know, in terms of the association, but he might not necessarily know the operatives, because he was not in the command element. So therefore, it is at least preferable to have somebody who was commanding and somebody who can relate to certain operation and certain individuals, who can at least with authority assist as a department. So that's the view we're taking here. But we take note of that, but this is why we are taking that position. In terms of the measuring progress, the challenge now which we are looking at, mainly, we are looking at that 80,000 plus people, and to say, do we at least have their contact numbers? Do we have their names? These IDs, are they confirmed with whatever? We can say, if we look at that, we can say we are moving. The challenge which is going, we are going to have at the end of the day, even after the second quarter check, we are going to have, we can have these files which are documents, but not in a soft copy form. And again, since they are files, we'll try to at least make sure that they are protected. But it will be more at least credible and secure when they are in a soft copy form. So that's the challenge there. Thanks. I might have missed one or two.
Thank you very much. I think what we're going to do going forward, if there are issues that we feel we did not get adequate answers to, we'll write, we'll want the answers in writing.
that we ask that we did not answer, because I tell you that we are taking notes on it, and you know which question was answered and which one wasn't. That those ones would also be done in writing. The members of the Transitional Committee will remain in the meeting for further discussion about the committee, of course. You know, we even talk about it a little bit. This meeting is adjourned.
Thank you, Chair. Just to confirm, Chair, that the two other items will come back for them in another form.
I see what you're talking about. I think they were relevant for the portfolio committee. And I think for this committee, the briefing was on the database, but even if yesterday. So we leave those to the committees. Let me also thank you for the presentation today. We certainly make progress eventually final product. But the second quarter is too far in general. Can you bring it forward to the end of the first quarter, not second quarter? Remember, it was on the 31st of October where we asked to come back in February with a final product. So, but you are still saying it's not in progress. Can we give you until the end of the first quarter? Start of the new budget, before the start of the new budget.
We will work on that, Chair. And with the understanding that in terms of making sure it's an integrated database which we need to manage, then because of the sector challenges which we have, we won't be able to make that part, but we'll be able to try and meet the target as far as whether it is hard copies, files, documents which are manual, be able to say this is where we are, and try to meet the need.
No, we would appreciate that. Then flag that as an outstanding issue. Thank you so much. You may check it.
Thank you.
Colleagues, two items that we still need to dispose of. Very short items. The second item is the minutes. We only have one set of minutes, right? Four sets. I don't have all the minutes. Can you assist me? Also, I've all of them, right? The first date being, I do not have them in order. The 10th of October. Please, can you do that? There you are, that's what I want. All right, colleagues, it's 10, 17, 38, and 28. All right, colleagues, in that order, please, let's look at them. I want to take them at having been read, because they were circulated, sent to all members ahead of this meeting. And in the first set, on the 10th of October, for a meeting that started at 12:30, and all right, let's look at the attendance. The first page up to the second page, are we all there? All right, and then the second part of the second page, colleagues, are we looking at the minutes, please, so that we can conclude this quickly. Third page and fourth page. Can I get a move by the seconder? Ms. Modise moves, and seconder, Ms. Pickers seconds. Right, the second, on the 17th, let's look at the first page, up to the first part of the second page. Attendance, show, it's in order. And then, second part,
page 2. Yes, Ms. All right, no, before that, that's page 3 and then page 4, right? Any issue on page 1? Ms. Page 1 and page 2? Apologies, we're not recorded on the. All right, can that be attended to? All right, any other correction? Right, any mover? Can I get a mover? Shalembe, we're in the meeting, eh? Yes, Shalembe moves. Seconder? Ms. Bigger seconds. Let's go to the third set of minutes. And for correction first, page 1, page 2, any correction? Page 3, page 4, page 5, page 6, any corrections, colleagues? And a mover? Yes, Ms. Jose, seconder? Chabela, are you
The standing committee wants the names here on the other side. It doesn't say that I'm from the ANC. It's so painful. It's just Mr. M-E-N-C-O-P.
Briefing us on their 2018 annual report.
Can we amend this item, suspend, and say they now have the 2018 and 2019. Remember, they use the calendar year. Right? They don't use the calendar that we use in the parliament and in other quarters. So in other words, we take a briefing on the tourism panel reports. But I'm not so sure if it would have been tabled, but let's check that. If it would have been tabled by them, but I think it would have been tabled by them. Alright? So in other words, 2018 annual report is a 2019 annual report. In other words, we are combining all the contents instead of giving them one by one when they now can report on the whole year. Alright? Colleagues, any move off? Do we accept this program of action for this quarter? Agreed? Agreed. It's been accepted. All right. So we've covered, dealt with all these items.